flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on King MOX.
Here we go on a Friday night. Welcome in. We're going to be a little shorter than normal tonight, but not by too terribly much. We'll lead you into SLU Billikens basketball. They are on the road this evening. Generally, if you're on the road in Philadelphia in the Eastern time zone, you're starting earlier than normal, but it's going to be a late night tonight at Hagen Arena in Philadelphia, an 8 o'clock central tip-off. That means they are tipping off tonight at 9 o'clock. That's going to give those fans out there a little time to get all ready and lubricated for that game. That's not always the toughest place to play, although SLU, they've had good success there. So that could be a challenging venue, but SLU, it's one of the few places that historically they've got a pretty good record at. It's just one of four venues in the A-10 where they have a winning record. So they come in having won 7 of their 10 A-10 games. The Billikens do. St. Joseph's, they are 4-5 in the conference. And we're actually going to talk a little bit more about that coming up later on in the program. Our guy, Matthew Rocchio, who does a great job with some Billikens coverage. He's also a working in studio with us tonight. He's going to join us here in about 10 minutes. So we've got a stacked program. 6:35, we'll head out to New Orleans for a conversation with our guy Joe Roderick. He's been covering the Super Bowl all week long, and we'll hear from him on what's been going on over the last couple days. He also has a conversation with Fox Sports broadcaster Chris Myers. We'll play that for you next hour. Also, our weekly Friday conversation between myself and Kevin Wheeler, where we look back at the week that was for the Cardinals. We'll do that coming up later on as well in the next hour before we get into Billikens basketball. Did want to start, though, with the news of the last about 26, 27 hours. Didn't get into this on the Countdown to Opening Day show yesterday, so we'll jump into both these things. And Kevin and I will certainly talk about this, but the Cardinals are making some roster tweaks going into pitchers and catchers reporting next Wednesday as spring training is just about here. And the interesting thing about the moves that have happened over the last couple days is a lot is being made of them because they are the only things that the Cardinals have done. In a normal season, in a normal offseason, these moves would barely be talked about. You're talking about a guy who has got mostly minor league experience, being picked up to hold the final spot on the 40-man roster, and someone with options who certainly does not have a guaranteed spot on the Major League roster, just adding a good depth piece to the 40-man. And you're talking about a guy who was signed as to a minor league contract and getting an invite to Major League spring training. In a normal year, normal offseason, we are casually mentioning these things, maybe referencing, well, if everything goes well, this is what it could potentially turn into, knowing full well that there's just as much of a shot of it not really, you know, resulting in anything as it resulting in something good. Well, Cardinals haven't done anything this offseason, so now all of a sudden we're putting a lot of focus on these moves. And I do think there is an upside to each of these moves that could play out. Could both these guys not even be in the organization by the time we get to opening day? Yes, that is a distinct possibility, depending on how spring training goes, depending on what else is available out there. If all of a sudden the Cardinals need a 40-man roster spot for something else, there's no guarantee they hold on to these guys. But the first one yesterday, Michael Hellman, was acquired from the Twins in exchange for cash considerations. The Twins no longer had room for him on their 40-man roster after they made a couple moves, including bringing in a former Cardinal in Harrison Bader. So they bring in Bader, they do a couple other things, they didn't have a spot on the 40-man roster, and instead of just losing him for nothing, they at least get the cash considerations from the Cardinals. Basically, the Cardinals give up nothing for him, if we're really being honest about it. And now Hellman comes in with at least an opportunity to compete for a job on the Major League roster. All offseason long, when we have talked to John Mozeliak about what additions the club could potentially make, even with the stated goal of moving on from Nolan Arenado, Mo has stated that he would like to add to the bullpen and he would like to add a right-handed bat that can play the outfield. Well, they have a right-handed bat who can play the outfield. And not only can Michael Hellman play in the outfield, he can basically go play any position you want outside of catcher. He has done that in the minor leagues. Even last year in the big leagues, he filled a few spots. So if we run into a situation where Nolan Arenado is still a Cardinal and he doesn't get traded before opening day, which I don't think that's likely. I think Arenado is going to get moved, but I could be wrong on that. If we run into a situation where the Cardinals do not move on from Nolan Arenado, that might result in Thomas Sagesi not being on the roster because there might just not be enough playing time for Sagesi, and a young guy like that, you want to make sure he's in the lineup a lot. Well, if Sagesi's not on the roster, you have to have somebody who can play shortstop when Mason Wynn's not available, and Hellman can play a little bit of shortstop. He's not going to be great there, but you don't need somebody great at shortstop. Mason Wynn plays just about every single day. And can you put a Jose Fermin there? Fermin's going to be on the roster, yeah, but Hellman can do more. He's a right-handed bat. He can play in the outfield. He can also play center field. So there's a lot of different things he can do. So this was a shrewd pickup by John Mozeliak and the Cardinals. It might turn into nothing, but it also might turn into something where this guy becomes a valuable piece. And 2 years ago, he had a fantastic minor league season. This past year at AAA, he was fine. He certainly did not embarrass himself in the very short amount of time he got in the big leagues last year. He appeared in 9 major league games last year, was 3-for-10 with a couple doubles. He's an OPS guy. He's going to get you some extra base hits, which is good. So again, this might be an absolutely nothing move, but it might also turn into something where he becomes a nice bench piece for the Cardinals. So worst case scenario, he doesn't do anything in spring and you need his 40-man roster spot for somebody else and you move on from him and you never gave up anything for him really in the first place. So I like this move and we'll see what ends up happening with him. The other move being made today, and I think this is the more interesting one because the Cardinals absolutely have some needs in the bullpen and they want to be able to have more guys who can handle high leverage innings. And I don't know how this is going to play out, but they signed Nick Anderson to a minor league contract that includes an invite to Major League spring training. Let's start with the downside of Anderson. He's had a hard time staying healthy. And you know, you hope that the Cardinals performance staff, which is, there's a new head on the performance side with Rob Serfolio. You hope that what results in that is Cardinals players being able to stay a little bit more healthy here moving forward. But when Anderson was at his best And he was with the Tampa Bay Rays in 2019. So he was with Heim Bloom in 2019. Heim Bloom's fingerprints are all over them bringing in Nick Anderson. Anderson in 2019 was really spectacular, especially when he split time between Miami and the Rays. By the time he got to the Rays, had a 2.11 ERA. His strikeout numbers, there were about 41 strikeouts in 21 innings, included his time in Miami that year, 110 strikeouts in 65 innings. He has historically been a 2-1, you know, two strikeouts per innings guy. Now, he ran into some injury issues, and those numbers have been going down recently. Last year was not an especially good year. He pitched with Kansas City last year. His ERA was 4, but when you looked at his expected ERA and you looked at his FIP and things like that, they were not great. They were 5+. So he did not have an especially good season last year, but a guy who throws hard, a guy who can get strikeouts when he's right, and somebody who's going to come in and compete for a spot with the Cardinals. So good, solid depth moves at the worst. These guys don't do much of anything in spring training, and maybe they end up outside of the organization. Their ceilings are high enough that at best they come in and they become pieces that the Cardinals are able to use. So it's good to have depth. That's what the Cardinals were looking for in these two moves, and it's nice to actually be able to talk about baseball players joining the organization. So that's kind of my take on that. More about those two individuals with Kevin Wheeler coming up at about 7:30 or so tonight. Up next, our guy Matthew Rocchio is going to join us. We'll talk some Billikens basketball with him. SLU in action this evening as they are set to match up on the road against St. Joseph's. So we'll preview that game coming up in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're a little short tonight. We've got almost a full show. We'll end about 15 minutes early because we've got Billikens basketball tonight, late night in Philadelphia. 8 o'clock tip-off, 7:45 for the broadcast with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. Billikens are coming off a win their last time out, where bluntly they stole it. They absolutely stole it at UMass, winning 73-71. Had no business winning that game, down I think 5 with about 35 seconds to go, and they came back. They made some plays defensively. They hit some big shots, and now they'll try to go for back-to-back road wins. They're in Philadelphia this evening, and they match up against St. Joseph's. Our own Matthew Rocchio, he's working in the studio tonight producing the show, but he does a great job covering the Billikens and certainly looking at them from a very unique stance. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should, at RockSTL. That's ROCCSTL. He joins us right now. And Matthew, I know that was a game that you were pretty fired up about the other night with the way they came back. That was something.
Yeah, that was insane. I mean, they keep on fighting, and usually they're one possession short, and that's the problem. They put themselves in these holes, and they can't climb out of it, one possession short. And then luckily, as so rarely happens, you turn the ball over on an inbounds and with under 30 seconds left and the game has changed.
But you know what? That's a great lesson for basketball in general, because these teams practice those kind of plays over and over and over. And like, what? It happens not even once a year. I mean, that never, ever, ever happens. But you work on that because you have to be ready and able to go if that situation presents itself.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think the context around some of those situations is interesting to me, because the turnover on the inbound play is inexcusable. But if you're looking at how the fans, you know, the opposing fans at UMass are reacting, they're really mad about the turnover earlier that Amari McCautry also caused, where they're trying to pass it through the lane and Amari knocks down. They're really mad at that. And I look at that, I go, well, honestly, if you're the player in the moment, you get those 2 points, the game is over.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was 3-on-2 UMass, and he thought, if I can thread this pass, it's game over. So from that perspective, it's like, I understand why the player was trying that, but this is, every once in a while, you know, the weird concoction of things happen and everything broke SLU's way.
It did, and winning games like that can play out, because I think this is still a team that's like learning how to win. They're learning. Yeah. I think they're still learning Josh Schertz's system. I don't think they're playing exactly the way coach wants them to play quite yet. But not only are they learning the X's and O's, clearly Schertz and company came in to lift the overall standard of Billiken's basketball, and that's winning close games, that's being able to fight, that's showing the character. It's all the cliche tag words that sportscasters use, but there's mm-hmm. There's truth behind all of those things. And winning a game like that in that moment, making the plays, yeah, you get the turnover, but then you got to hit the basket. To miss the shot and then get the second opportunity and to shoot that three the way that went down. I mean, that's a team that is learning how to win games like that, and that's what it takes to win games in March.
And you kind of mentioned Swope's plays. For me, the big one is the play of Amari McCautry. And if you watch the highlight, specifically, there's a slew video that they put out where they're shooting from the baseline side, where Amari McCautry's reaction after Isaiah Swope hits that three pointer to take the lead, his head drops into his hands, and it's obviously just pure elation, but also that's a weight off a freshman's shoulders who was getting minutes in the non conference schedule mm-hmm. and then kind of hit a wall a little bit. And hadn't been getting those minutes. And despite the fact the team needed him to play, because he would play, he'd play 2 minutes, he'd make a defensive mistake, he'd turn the ball over, and he wouldn't see the floor again. So him getting those minutes in crucial clutch moments and making the play, that was big for Amari McCautry going forward, and that was big for SLU having a player like Amari McCautry, who's right now your seventh player despite being a freshman. He's got to make an impact in these last 8 games and into the conference tournament.
It was 9 seconds left when SLU took the lead, right? Did
yes,
I have that right?
I believe so.
That was the longest 9 seconds.
Yes, it was.
You know, and I mean, 9 seconds is an eternity in basketball. And for that game to end the way it ended with the block and everything, I mean, I think anybody watching that, hoping for a SLU win, saw that whole thing play out in slow motion.
Yeah. It was definitely slowed down. You're thinking, and just the way the season's gone for St. Louis this season, you're thinking, well, they're going to the line because Kalu's going to get tagged up for a foul on the block, and then we're going to overtime, and who knows what happens there. That's the kind of thought process you have after some of the games that SLU's played in this year.
Really random, off the beaten path thing. I've seen this on social media. There was a UMass kid who was like supposed to win $10,000 for making 4 shots, including a half court shot. And then anytime like you win money like that in a contest, it's always an insured thing. Like if you win a radio contest for $100,000, the radio station isn't giving you that money. They have a deal with an insurance company. They pay the insurance company, and then the insurance company pay it. So the kid's foot was on the line at half court when he made the shot. So now the insurance company is saying, we're not paying you the $10,000. The UMass AD I saw today on social media was like, we're going to get him this money. So was that the SLU game where that happened?
Because I actually believe it was actually a UMass women's basketball.
You're right. It was a UMass women's game. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Well, and you know, with a way schedule, sometimes they line up, but I do not believe that was against the SLU.
No, you're 100% right. It was a UMass women's, because I saw what UMass first tried to offer the kid, like, instead. Yeah. And with all, I love women's basketball. I spent years broadcasting women's basketball at the collegiate level. This is not a shot at women's basketball at all. But if you're supposed to win $10,000 and the consolation prize is courtside tickets at a women's game, like, it's not the same.
UMass, by the way, has come out and said that they will. They're giving him the $10,000.
Good
themselves.
Like to $10,000 is a lot of money, but to an athletic department, you should be able to lose $10,000.
Yeah, they're doing fine.
Yeah, you'll be all right. This game, but a couple things. Robbie Avila is a top 10 candidate for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. This award each year goes to the top center in college basketball. We've seen the center not have so much. They're going away, college basketball in general, NBA college basketball. It's more about positionless basketball. But Avila is one of those guys that can show you that if you use the center the right way, they can have a profound impact on the other four guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And you can feel it when he doesn't have that impact, as he hasn't had for the last few games, how much, the orbit changes completely for the St. Louis offense, and teams can now focus on Isaiah Swope, and they can force Gibson Jimerson away from the three-point line, and now he has to be a threat at driving the ball, and he has been. That's the only reason they've been in these games the last few rounds. But Robbie's got to step it up. There's a reason he's on that watch list, which is that he can carry a team, and tonight's going to be a big game, and hopefully Robbie steps up for it.
Yeah, St. Joseph's, again, they're not special. They're 4-5 in A-10 play, and this is actually one of, I said this earlier, this is one of those places that the Billikens actually have had a fair amount of success being able to go to and play in. But there is nothing tougher than a road win. It's really challenging to go on a road trip and get back-to-back road wins. I don't care who you're playing. It's a conference game. It's going to be late night. We'll see how many fans they get tonight and how rowdy they might be. National TV game, 9 o'clock start in Philadelphia. I'm not saying this is a hornet's nest situation, but I am saying Billikens need to be ready to go.
Yeah, they are. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised at where the line's been going. It's actually been bending towards St. Joseph in Vegas, which kind of surprises me. It's moved, more in favor of St. Joseph than it was than it opened. And you have to realize 16-point win for the Billikens back at home. Big thing there though was Xavier Brown, who probably not the best player on St. Joseph's, but has the highest usage rate. When he's on the floor, the ball's going to be in his hands a lot of the time. He was injured for a couple games, and he was coming back during that game here in St. Louis. He only played like 15, 16 minutes coming off the bench. He's been in the starting lineup now for the last 6-7 games since that game. He's averaging almost 19 points per game. So him being back in the lineup, that's going to be a big aspect to why this game is right now in Vegas's mind breaking towards the Hawks.
Yeah, I see St. Joe's 6.5. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, that's what I got too.
Okay, so we'll see. So the Billikens trying to get the, we'll call it an upset if they win tonight. Billikens are looking for the upset tonight in St. Joseph's. Matthew, thanks for taking a few moments.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Matthew Rocchio joining us, talking Bills basketball. When we come back, our friend Joe Roderick joins us from New Orleans. That's next. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. You're going to get a lot of Joe Roderick here over the next hour or so. He's about to join us from New Orleans, and then he collected an interview with Fox Sports broadcaster Chris Myers, talking through a lot of things, talking baseball, talking football, talking even dog shows. That's going to be coming up in our next hour. So you want to be tuned in for that. But right now, let's head to New Orleans. Our good friend Joe Roderick, who's covering the Super Bowl for us, is there. Hey, Joe, how's New Orleans treating you over the last couple of days?
New Orleans has been great. You can really tell. I mean, as the week goes on, the crowds, they just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And today, leaving the convention center, I mean, it is just all red and green all over town.
What type of events going on at the convention center today that you were at?
So that's where Media Row has been all week. That's kind of been, I mean, the convention center down here in New Orleans is one of the biggest in the country. It takes a real long time to get from the Great Hall A all the way down to Hall J. It's a trek, and the media center is kind of right in the middle of it. And then as you go down, that's where the NFL experience is, which has it again. That's another thing that has just exploded over the last few years. That's one of the. It's made for kids, and it has a lot of interactive games, target practice. They make it feel like you're in a 2-minute drill or like a scrambling running or quarterback. They have a 40-yard dash. You can kick field goals out there. There's just you can pretend like you're a draft pick. There are so many things to do, and it takes up a huge, huge area of the convention center. And then as you're walking around, you can buy drinks and food for unreasonable prices. It really is just jam-packed, and it's one of those where I kind of always try to sneak in there around Tuesday and check it out, because that's when they're putting the final touches on it. Because once it opens up at about 3 o'clock on Wednesday, it's really, really hard to walk around the experience. And of course, after you're done at the experience, they take you through the NFL team shop, which if you can think of it, they will sell it to you with an NFL logo or a team logo on it.
What is the most egregious price that you have seen on something since being down there?
Oh man, just like a regular like quarter zip, Matt. I just like there are things I won't even like touch. I won't even look at. But there was like a quarter zip that I looked at the other day. It was $180. Hmm. It's just, I mean, it's a dry fit quarter zip, and it's $180. But I mean, they also there. You know, you can find the cheap stuff there. Like you could find just a regular cotton T-shirt for $35 that has the Super Bowl logo on it. Or you can get stuff that, they partner with Tommy Bahama or Starter, and they partner with all of the big companies, and really just the price gets up there quite a bit on some of these things. I always get I collect the mini helmets from all of the Super Bowls. I get a mini helmet every year when I go for that, and just the price of that. I think I remember, like, the first one I bought probably was been about $40, and now it's $65. So it's just the price just keeps going up a little more each and every year.
The Super Bowl is always interesting because so many of the tickets are connected to NFL corporate partners, and there's going to be a lot of people who are sitting in that game who don't have much of a rooting interest, but obviously it's also the biggest game, and fans try to get in there. Two pretty rabid fan bases with the Philadelphia fan base and the Kansas City fan base. As you've walked around, do you feel like there's more Chiefs fans or more Eagles fans there?
That's a good question. I think I would have to say Eagles, and I don't think that means it's going to be more Eagles fans than Chiefs fans at the actual Super Bowl on Sunday. I think one of the reasons for that is because the Chiefs have been there so much, their fans will still go. Their fans just don't feel the need to get there a few days early to experience everything going on in the city, if that makes sense. Like, they know, hey, I could just fly in Sunday night and I could just go to the game. I don't need to be there for every single minute of it, where I know the Eagles were just there a couple years ago, and this is actually, I believe, the third Super Bowl that I've covered where the Eagles have played in it. But I still think that fan base has not, you know, seen it enough. And I think that's similar to maybe like the Patriots, you know, 10 years ago, where they were there so often that at some point fans are like, okay, you know, if you really, really wanted to go there and buy a ticket, you probably would have done so already.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about some of the off-field stuff, but we're now within a couple days of the actual game being played. From a health standpoint, Kansas City's really healthy. All players on the 53-man roster are healthy. Sky Moore, who's on injured reserve, has been limited in practice, listed as doubtful, so he probably won't be active. But of the 53 players on the actual roster, they're all set to play for Philadelphia. Brandon Graham, he says he's going to play, but he's listed as questionable. But it certainly seems like each of these teams were able to use that extra week last week. And for the most part, we're going to see just about everybody in this game.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And you have two really good coaches that are probably very well prepared and not going to be fooled by anything that these teams are going to put out there on Sunday. And that's something I know you and I kind of talked about the other day, that these teams, you know, they'll have that one play. They'll kind of have something that maybe you haven't seen yet. I really don't think that you're going to see Sirianni or Andy Reid get fooled by that in either direction. So I think they know who the weapons are. They know who they need to stop, and they're going to be ready to go on the game. So I think everyone is set, and there will be no surprises come Sunday.
I've said this over and over, but I'll say it again with my very amateur breakdown of this. I think the Eagles have the better 53-man roster, but I also think the Chiefs have the better leaders offensively and defensively in their coaches and Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. I think the Chiefs have the better quarterback, and I think it's going to be a good game, but until Kansas City loses one of these things and doesn't make the plays late, I have a really hard time believing that they're going to lose this one. I think Kansas City wins again.
I have the Eagles winning it because I think the Eagles have the best player on the field on their team. And that's Saquon Barkley. I think he is, you know, we saw many times during the year he was an MVP candidate. There were many times where he just touched the ball and took off. I think that he is going to, I think he wins MVP. I think the Eagles win the Super Bowl. It's a ridiculous prop bet that I threw out there, but I teased it up to Saquon Barkley rushing for over 200 yards in the game on Sunday with two touchdowns. It's a real nice payout if it happens to hit, Matt.
There's no way Saquon gets over 200 yards rushing. There's no way.
The odds on it are really ridiculous.
I'm sure. Yeah. You know what? You can also go take some money and put it in a trash can and set it on fire, and you'll get the same return on it. So there you go. I will bow down to you if that happens.
Cardinals, I think the Cardinals making the playoffs, I think we're better odds than Saquon rushing for 200. So. Yeah.
Look, I mean, I get it. Philadelphia was number one scoring defense in the NFL this past season, but it wasn't like Kansas City was a schlub. They were, I think they were fourth in scoring defense this past year. That's a, and they've lifted their game in the playoffs, and Spags has been, man, he's been on a roll here in the playoffs doing some things. So I don't know if anybody's going to go off offensively in this game.
Yeah. You know what? He's going to break one for about 70 yards in the first quarter, and you're going to text me, and we're going to sit there and we're going to be on 200 watch early on in the game after he breaks a big one in the first quarter.
I love you, Joe. I think there's a higher percentage chance that he runs for under 100 than he runs for over 200.
I don't know what those. I need to look and see what those odds would be of him being held under 100 yards, because man. If that happens, I'd be really, really interested to know which way that means things are going. If that means that Jalen Hurts is just throwing the ball, or if the Eagles just have zero offense at all.
Yeah, look, the Steve Spagnuolo versus Vic Fangio part of this game, and I know talking about coach versus coach isn't as sexy as talking about player versus player, but Spags versus Fangio may be the deciding factor in this game.
Yeah, and just think, I mean, with the blitzes that we have seen Spags go with here, that could, I mean, and that's one of the things where you wonder how he's going to defend that, because if he's sending 6-7 guys like we saw him do against Josh Allen in big time plays, if Saquon gets past that line, he is off to the races if that happens.
Yeah, 100%. So we'll see how this whole thing plays out for sure. But it's gonna be fun. And before I let you go, what is the best event? And I know there's still a little bit of time, and I know you'll get to places. What is the best event that you have gone to so far during your time at the Super Bowl?
I went to Chris Stapleton last night. The SiriusXM Pandora put on a Chris Stapleton concert, and he played all the bangers last night. So it was a great show last night. Every year I always enjoy the Taste of the NFL. That is on Saturday afternoon. That is so that's what I'm going to then. They bring in restaurants from all over the country, from every single NFL city. They bring in restaurants from all over, along with a few local restaurants, and that is always one of my favorite events that they put on, and it's always really, really good food, and it's something I always look forward to on Saturday afternoon of the Super Bowl.
All right, very good. Joe, we appreciate it. We're going to play your conversation with Chris Myers coming up next hour, so people hear more from you then. Thank you for doing that, and safe travels getting back home. We'll see you, I guess, in Florida here pretty soon.
Yeah, safe travels to you down to Jupiter. I'll see you there in a couple days.
All right, very good. That is Joe Roderick covering the Super Bowl for us. We'll take a break, come back, and we'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
To put the final touches here on hour number one and hour number two, actually the final 45 minutes of the program, because we get done early tonight for Billikens basketball. They are going to match up this evening against St. Joseph's. Our coverage at 7:45 with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. And then tip off just after 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern. It is going to be a late night tonight of college basketball. So we'll have that for you coming up here on KMOX. I did want to we talked about this earlier with Matthew Rocchio, but in case you didn't catch it, good big news for the Billikens today, and that Robbie Avila, one of the top 10 candidates for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Award. This award each year goes to the top center in all of college basketball. So it'd be really cool if he could come away with the win there. Even when his scoring is down, he is someone who continues to really impact things in a big way. So you'd like to see – I heard Josh Schertz mention the other day that he's got to adjust better to what defenses are giving him, and – maybe at times he's a little bit more pass first. It's okay for him to be aggressive, and I'd like to see that happen a little bit more here moving forward. Want to mention the Blues really quickly before we break for the 7 o'clock news with Maria. You know, I was frustrated with this team earlier in the season when Drew Bannister was the coach, and I wouldn't say I placed the blame on Drew Bannister, but I would say I didn't think Drew Bannister was making the team better. And I really, really like Jim Montgomery. I don't know if Montgomery's making the team better right now, and that's not an indictment on Montgomery. That becomes more of an indictment on just the team and who they are. Because if Drew Bannister, maybe this isn't fair to Drew Bannister. If Bannister's not making the team better, you're thinking, well, if Bannister's a more established coach, could he be doing some things differently? And clearly, like, when you have your players calling you out for not working on offense enough in practice, like, obviously there are things that he was doing that were not great. I don't think any of us actually know the impact positively or negatively of those two things, because as Montgomery took over and as that new coach bump or whatever it is started to wear off, we have largely seen this team, I wouldn't say come back to who they were before, because previous, if you use your eyes and watch them play, they're better. They're better now than they were under Bannister, but they're not better to an extent that they're getting more wins. They're not better to a point where they're making a legit playoff run. Yeah, they may not be giving up 8 goals a game and losing 8-3 like they did under Bannister, but they're still losing games. And these last 2 games have been a microcosm of what is holding the Blues back from a big picture perspective, not even like jumping into the details of the game, but just what the game really represents. On Tuesday, they lose to Edmonton 3-2 in overtime. They had a late lead in that game. They could not hold on to it. They end up losing in overtime. Right now, if you're the Blues and you've got a chance to win a game, you have to win the game. And they didn't win it. Last night against Florida, 2-2 game with 12 seconds to go, Matthew Tkachuk scores a goal. So they're 12 seconds away from at least securing a point. If you can get a point, you have to get a point. So the Blues in the last 2 games, opening up a 6-game homestand that's incredibly important, they have lost the opportunity for a win, and they've lost the opportunity for a point, and now they have sat here and lost 6 of their last 7.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just not good for this team. We'll continue to talk through a number of things when we're back after the 7 o'clock news here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it as we continue on here, our Friday night edition. We get done early tonight for SLU basketball. I'm going to tell you, this segment's going to be pretty quick because we've got a couple things coming up this hour that we wanted to give some time for. Joe Roderick, he's got a conversation with Chris Myers, Fox Sports broadcaster. We're going to play that coming up in just a few moments. And then later on this hour, our guy Kevin Wheeler is going to join us for our weekly Friday baseball conversation, which we always enjoy doing. You know, I just saw this on social media today. Codify Baseball has put out their win totals for the upcoming season, and Cardinals are near the bottom of their win totals. They put it at 75.5. Only the Angels, the A's, the Braves, no, excuse me, the Nationals, Miami, Colorado, and the White Sox have a lower number. The PCOTA projections recently came out, put the Cardinals win total at 78.5 right there. I know those don't sound great, and look, I'm not going to try to totally spin this in a positive way. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But I will say this. Those projections are very much based off track records of what you have on the roster. And the Cardinals' ability to have more success than people expect them to have this year is based off players without track records taking steps forward. If Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman take big steps forward and are legit middle-of-the-order run producers like we thought they were going to be when they were coming up, then this team does much better than those projections. If that doesn't happen, then those projections probably end up being somewhat close to correct. It is a very wide range of what could happen this year with the Cardinals. All right, like I said, quick segment here. We want to get to Chris Myers. Joe Roderick is with him coming up in just a few moments right here on KMOX. It's a Great Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We heard from Joe Roderick earlier on the show. He's been doing a great job of covering the Super Bowl for us all week long. That includes a conversation with Fox sportscaster Chris Myers. So with that, let's hand things back off to Joe.
Chris, get away from the football maybe for a little bit and talk a little baseball with you from time to time. We see you on Fox Sports right. doing all the baseball stuff. And it's such a weird time in St. Louis this year, Chris, because they are in what they're calling a reset.
Yeah, nobody likes to hear rebuild because it's just like it almost says we're not going to be winning. But there are ways to stay competitive while you rebuild and retool. And, yeah, because the Cardinals have, and first of all, the great fan base at a high standard, you just expect, it doesn't have to be Dodger, Yankee splashy, but you expect something that says, hey, we're trying to win, we're trying to do things. And I'm a little surprised because the Cardinals, you always expect them. Just seems like we got used to them, whether they were getting the World Series or not. They were at least contending to make the playoffs, especially with the expanded playoffs. And I are they getting closer to that? It just doesn't seem that way at the moment.
It's odd, too, because they kind of went into the year, you know, they told Goldschmidt, hey, we're not re-signing you. And they tell Arenado, hey, we're going to try. They made it known to all of baseball that we are going to trade
the
one of the best third basemen of all time. We're going to trade him. Pitchers and catchers report here in about five days.
Yeah, we're close.
Nolan Arenado is still a St. Louis Cardinal. Right. Like the one move, it's looked like he was on his way to Houston and he vetoed it. And it's like where's the disconnect there?
And how does it make the player feel too? If like, well, I'm going to give my all, I'm paid to do it. But like, you're already kind of offering to usher me out of here. And then you may know more too about the Cardinal pitching. And that's always a ticket and a way to get in or develop. I mean, obviously going out and signing some ace pitcher somewhere, and that's not happening. But that's also a way. And I don't know. I haven't looked into their staff enough to see where things are going. I mean, I saw some encouraging signs, but I just don't see enough in the lineup and the overview, I think, of the Cardinal team, which is – but, the division is the division, so
right.
there's hope. The Cardinals are one of those, like the Yankees, like the Dodgers, few standard franchises. You really almost want them to be in the hunt. You know, as somebody who covers baseball, or at least when we get towards the postseason, you're doing highlights. It's just better in having covered a lot of postseason games are back when Tony La Russa was there, the fan vibe. And I measure that a lot. You know, Chicago has it, Boston has it, but the Cardinal fans and that setting, I think what I'm saying is they deserve a little more. So hopefully ownership, front office, I know there's been some discussion there and some shuffling of it, but hopefully they have a plan.
Here with Chris Myers, Chris, you were saying you're not fully into the baseball mode yet. Compartmentalize your sports for the year with everything that you do.
Yeah, and you hit on it. That's what I kind of do, which is why I almost have to block out, for now, a little bit of NBA and baseball because I was in football mode. I have the Daytona 500, so NASCAR mode, and then spring training, so then you're getting ready for the season. So then I'm still doing NASCAR, but I kick into baseball, and I start to follow college and pro hoops a little bit more because you're getting towards, obviously the tournament, and then NBA playoffs are down in the summer, and following that. But that's really the best way to do it. And you're zeroing in on obviously calling a game, whatever it is at the moment. So if you think about too many other sports, obviously we're fans, so we follow those, but not like we do as an intense broadcaster doing homework. So that's what the key is. You said it, compartmentalize. And I kind of learned that early from some athletes who talked about things that not that they had other jobs, but they had to zero in on particular study habits here, teammate work here, working with a coach here. And they've kind of showed me some methods, I think, to make that work.
So how do you enjoy then watching, if you're just sitting back and you don't to do the homework, or you're just turn it on? Is there, I mean, do you go to like a sport that you don't cover as much or?
Yeah, no, it's like, even if I, let's just say I have a weekend off in the NFL or I'll watch college football. So I do watch as a fan, you know, but I also always as a broadcast fan, I would have said this or that was a great line. I see why how that he said that. That's something that I should do more of because I'm always thinking of the viewer at home or the listener. And if it's radio, what do they want? What do they want to see? What do they want to hear? And what important questions do I need to bring up in the game with an analyst, that type of thing. So, yeah, I'm always kind of working in that mode because I am a fan. And so, yeah, even if it's a sport I don't follow as closely, I'll still enjoy it.
You have your book out that just came out. That deserves a wow. So now, author, yeah, add that to everything else that you're.
Yeah, and the book, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you can also get the audio book. It's a sports book. It's a little bit like if we used a movie reference, Forrest Gump, it was sports meets Almost Famous, the one about, the rock and roll journalist, because I started at a young age. But it combines a lot of wow moments that people will relate to, but it takes you beneath and after around the scene and some great personalities. Bill Murray wrote the foreword, who I know is a big Cubs fan, who tells me he hates the Cardinals, but he loves baseball, so we'll live with that. But it has some great baseball stories in there, and Super Bowl coverage as well.
And you're here today, Synergy X and the Low T Center.
I've worked with them before. Low T has been around a long time, and get your T levels checked if you want to lose some weight, if your energy level is down. They help you with that with your healthcare provider. The most important thing they do is they personalize what you need. If you need to increase your testosterone, if you need to decrease, and they'll set up a kit so they make it easy for you at home once you've gone to your doctor or Low T to have it tested. So lowt.com or synergenics.com is the way to at least reach out, see what you need if you're not getting the energy level you want. Or you have some weight loss issues, but you're doing the other kinds of things and that's not working, which is, eating right and exercising.
How will you be watching the game on Sunday?
I'll probably because I have to go to New York for the dog show, Westminster Kennel Club dog show, Monday, Tuesday, Best in Show from Madison Square Garden. It's live. So I'll probably be with the Fox crew watching the game as opposed to being, if I'm not working the game, I almost like watching it on TV rather than sitting in person in the stands or in a booth somewhere, because then I could do what we were talking about. I can enjoy it as a fan, but I can also look as a broadcaster or a critic of myself if I was covering the game as I had in the past or calling a game.
How many years is this now that you've done the dog show?
It's like 6 or 7 when Fox got the rights. Yeah.
Consider yourself, are you like an expert now in it? Do you look at that and you
well, it's funny. I'll never, even for football or baseball, and I've been doing football for 40 years, baseball 30. I'm never an expert because that's why we have an analyst. But I'm a fan who prepares as a broadcaster. But my wife works with rescue dogs, and so it does a lot with that. So I'm around that a lot. I always grew up in our family with dogs, but they were not the kinds of dogs you see at the dog show that are eating steak and lobster and getting their hair done more than I get my hair done.
That's Joe Roderick with Chris Myers. We appreciate that. We'll take a break, and when we return, talk all things baseball with Kevin Wheeler, our weekly Friday conversation on the way next. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Starting to wrap things up, we're going to get done just a little bit early tonight. We've got SLU basketball. They match up against St. Joseph's in Philadelphia. Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., they are there, and they've got the call of the game. Right now, it's time for our Friday conversation with our very good friend, Kevin Wheeler. Kevin, good to see you.
Good to see you, buddy.
You think Rammer and Earl have got a Philly cheesesteak?
Oh, I'd say they probably have had one in the last 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, pretty good chance.
They're in Philly tonight. I don't know why you'd be there, because you're in the city too, right? St. Joe's in the city. So yeah. If you're in the city, you got cheesesteaks anywhere.
The best cheesesteak I've ever had in my life. It's courtesy of Jim Hayes. So inside of the Phillies clubhouse, there's a chef in there that makes cheesesteaks. And Jim Hayes loves them. And this past year, I was with the team when their trip to Philadelphia. And Jim went into the Phillies clubhouse and he bought a Philly cheesesteak for everybody between the two broadcasts. So, and we're everybody. So if you were a production person on the TV side,
that's awesome.
He came up with just bags and bags of Philly cheesesteaks. And it was so flippin' delicious.
Philly cheesesteaks are good no matter where you get them. They're better in Philly.
Yeah. 100%.
No matter where you're getting them, but the local places, obviously that's more of a local flavor. Yeah. That's not a chain restaurant. It's just the way they do it. the way they season it, the oils that they use, it's just
It was different. That was my first time in Philadelphia, so I never had a true
My mom's
Philly
family's from Philly, so we went there every spring and sometimes every winter too, so we had plenty. You getting the Philly cheesesteaks, and then they're not sub sandwiches, they're hoagies.
Yes.
Getting hoagies, man.
Really good. All right, so we always talk on Friday, kind of look back at the week that was for the Cardinals, and this past week a little bit more smoke coming out when it comes to a possible Nolan Arenado trade. I still think everything is being held up by the Alex Bregman situation, but it feels like once that Bregman thing gets figured out, or maybe if a team like Boston says, you know what, Bregman's not coming to us, so we gotta get to our plan B, that something's gonna happen. I don't think Nolan Arenado reports to Jupiter. I could be wrong.
I'm not hoping for that, but there's still plenty of time before position players report.
Yeah.
You know, pitchers and catchers are this week. Position players are what, 4 days after that?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a little bit more space. I don't think it's crazy that there's a move before that. I'm not going like crazy raging hot take here, but kind of a half hot take. Can Alex Bregman just make up his mind?
No kidding.
I mean, the offers are not changing significantly between now and a week from now.
Right.
You've got, from what I understand in the reports, you've got Toronto making a big offer. The large years at the large dollars. Sounds like Detroit might be one of those teams, too, that's got like a 6-year offer out there, but maybe not. But it sounds like maybe. We know that the Houston offer was in that range. We don't know if it still is, because Houston people are, you know, talking about him in the past tense when they're doing public speaking engagements. And then we know that the Red Sox and the Cubs are offering shorter term deals at the high AAV. Well, make a call. What are you going to get? An extra $20? I'm being sarcastic. It's not like you're going
to... That's what it would be to us.
Right. Yeah. But like, nobody's going to be like, well, we've been at 150, but we're going to jump to 200 a week before spring training. Yeah. That doesn't happen. Make a call, because he is legitimately, and I know he can't totally consider this, but he's holding back a lot of other players. Not just the Arenado thing, which is what we care about, but there are a bunch of free agents out there that would like jobs, and they may not be available to those guys until the teams know whether they're in or out on Bregman.
Yeah, 100%. You got that right. And like, I read last night that Houston had added a little bit of money to their deal, but it wasn't enough to make a difference.
Right.
So that's the point you're making. Houston pushed themselves
a little bit, if anything.
Yeah, but it's not enough to make a difference. And, man...
And if you don't want to be in Toronto or Detroit or whatever, don't lead them on either.
Right, tell them.
You want to be in Boston, take the deal.
Yeah.
They're not going to go from 3 to 6 years, right? If where you want to be is Chicago with the Cubs or Boston, they're not going to double the years on their offers. You probably could get from 6 to 7 on Toronto. They seem to be a little extra urgent compared to other teams. But if you don't want to go to Toronto, their presence is not going to make those other teams double the length of what they're offering you.
I would not give him a 6 or 7 year deal.
I'd give him 6 if I'm the right team. If I'm Toronto, I'd probably do it. You know, honestly, if I'm Detroit, I'd probably do it. You know, if you're looking at it, again, you know, I grew up in Detroit, so I've got my Tigers roots. You have a 2-year window left where you know you have Tarik Skubal. Maybe take the run. You got one of the best pitchers in baseball. You've got a really great, you got one of the top 3 farm systems in baseball. You got a good young team. You made the playoffs last year. You just brought Jack Flaherty back. Maybe you do it. The only big contract they have is Javi Baez.
Sure.
And it's a terrible contract.
Terrible deal.
Which is why they're probably scared of a guy like Bregman. But Bregman is not Baez. Bregman will age better than Baez. Baez is an athletic dynamic at his peak, was an athletic dynamic power player with no discipline and who swings at everything. And the slower your bat gets, the worse you get. Bregman's not that. He's a disciplined hitter. The strike zone judgment's not going to go away. He'll age better than a guy like Javi Baez would, just from the profile alone. So I get it. I understand the concern. But by the time you get to the worrisome years there, Baez's contract will be gone. I know they want to pay Skubal, but you may not get that chance.
Right. It's going to be tough.
If he gets to free agency, he might be a $45 million a year pitcher if he's healthy. So why not make a little push? Now, I don't know that they will, but I'm saying they could. I think the Cubs are where they are. They're going to do it on their terms. Boston's going to do it on their terms. Boston doesn't need it, especially when they know that they could turn around and trade for Arenado at almost no cost.
Yeah, I almost feel like the reports of the re-engagement with Boston, as much as that might end up happening, it's also to
Boston
show
telling Bregman to get off the can.
Right. Like, we
get moving, buddy.
We've got other options here.
Yeah.
And they should, because it just, I complained about this the other day. This year's hot stove for Cardinal fans was already going to be a little bit different because of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But this situation with Bregman has just destroyed anything that's fun about the offseason.
Yeah, and look, I understand a player has to do what's right for them. So, I mean, that's why I'm saying it's only a semi-hot take. I'm not saying that Bregman is responsible for the futures of other players or anything like that. And let's be honest, part of this is also on Nolan. He had a chance to accept the deal to a pretty good situation and didn't want to go there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is not all on Bregman, but we all have been talking about this for more than a month now, that Bregman's decision will probably determine whether or not anything can happen.
Is Jose Altuve willing to go play left field so Nolan Arenado can play third?
It sounds like it.
He's willing to do it for Bregman. Yeah. Is he willing to do it for,
I mean, it sounds like he might do it even Arenado? If they don't bring Bregman back.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's been declining defensively. So, you know, Houston's a team that's like, whatever they can do to stay, you know, at the top of their game and wherever their strengths are, they're a little thinner in the outfield as far as ability. So that might also help them there, because they play Yordan Alvarez out there and they're better off with him at DH.
Cardinals do make two small moves over the last 2 days. Let's go through both of them. We'll start with the move from yesterday. Utility man Michael Hellman comes in. The Twins needed some spots on their 40-man roster, so they're going to move on from Hellman. They're able to work out a deal with the Cardinals. They get some cash considerations in that. Hellman's an interesting guy. He can play all over the field. In the minor leagues, he played every position but catcher. He had some really solid minor league seasons.
Yeah.
Was an older AAA guy, made his major league debut last year, very limited time. Looked fine. John Mozeliak has spoken all offseason about the desire to add to the bullpen and to add a right-handed bat that can play in the outfield. So he's done both those things over the last couple days. But specifically to Hellman, this is your last guy on the 40-man roster. This is a guy with minor league options, so he might be earmarked for Memphis. But he's also somebody that, if he has a nice spring or if something happens during the season, he could do something on the major league roster.
Well, who's the bench today? So let's just count. Let's just start with the assumption for this argument, for this conversation, that Herrera is the starting catcher.
Okay.
So Pajes is on the bench.
Right.
But one of them is. So there's going to be four bench spots. One will be a catcher, right?
Yes.
Okay. So who else is on the bench for sure? Like, no questions asked, regardless of what happens in spring training, who else is on the bench?
Well, depending on how you view it, either Ciani or Donovan, essentially. Because Donovan's
an everyday guy. Yeah, I'm counting Donovan as a starter.
Okay. So
no matter how it goes. So let's call it Ciani.
Okay. Let's call it Ciani. Yep.
All right. After that, who else is on there?
I want it to be Sajacy.
Could
but
be.
I'm not sure if he's there with Nolan Arenado on the roster.
But he should only be there if he's going to play.
Right.
He's not going to. I was having this conversation on Twitter with somebody, and I thought it'd be a good one to bring up. Sajacy's not going to be here if he's not going to play regularly.
Right.
He's not going to be here in a setting where he's going to get 150 at-bats this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play at AAA if they don't have 400 at-bats for him. Okay? So if he's here, he's going to be playing regularly. If he's not playing regularly, he's not going to be here.
Yes.
Okay. But let's count him.
Okay.
All right? Who's the fourth guy?
There's a few in there. You can look at a Lucan Baker. You can look at a Jose Fermin.
Right, but what is Baker? He's a one-trick pony.
Yeah, right-handed
bat. He's a right-handed bat against left-handed pitching.
Sure.
He can't play defense. He can't run. He gives you no late-inning versatility.
Yeah.
Right? And by the way, neither does Ciani. He gives you one thing, outfield.
Do we consider Burleson bench or DH?
I'm thinking Burleson DH in this scenario.
All right.
So, again, so is it Fermin? A no-bat guy who can't play the outfield and doesn't run very well? Is it Jose Barrero, who at one time was a pretty good prospect, who's actually very physically gifted.
Right.
But
they brought him in for a reason.
Right. He could be that guy. And he's a right-handed bat. He's got a little pop, but he's not a good hitter. Or it could be a guy like Hellman, right? And Hellman covers a lot of things because he can play. Not only does he play outfield, he plays center field.
Mm-hmm.
He runs. He's a good runner. So his primary positions have been second base and center field. He's played a lot of third. He's played a bunch of short. He's played corner outfield. As you mentioned, he's touched first base.
Right.
But mostly second base and center. But the fact that he can play center field separates him from Baker, from Fermin, from all those guys. And the fact that he has some time at shortstop.
Right. Because the team has to have somebody who can play shortstop when Wynn isn't in there.
Yeah. Even if it's just a day.
Right.
So, you know, that separates too, because Fermin's not a shortstop.
No.
No, and Barrero was a shortstop, and he can play there, but the Reds moved him to the outfield.
And so JC at some point will be that guy.
And so JC can play some shortstop too, right? Which is my point. If he's here, though, it's going to be as a regular player. Maybe not every day, but he'll play probably at least four times a week he's here.
He'll be the guy that if Wynn needs a day, he'll go play shortstop.
Probably, yes, because he's got extensive shortstop time in the minors.
Yeah, and he looked fine there last year.
He's not good at it, but he's fine.
Yeah.
He's a fine fill-in. Fill-ins don't have to be elite.
No.
They just have to be fine, and he's a good hitter. So I don't know that Hellman's going to have to win a job. You're not bringing him in and saying, you're on our team. But he's more intriguing than almost all of those other candidates for that last bench spot because he can play six positions, and he can run, and he's got some pop. He had a 20-40 season in 2022. That's not that long ago.
No.
And if you're asking why he didn't follow that up in 23 or 24, well, 23, he suffered a shoulder dislocation in May, and it ended his season. And so his numbers are just incomplete that year. He's got a month's worth of numbers. And then last year, his numbers at AAA were fine. He had an 800 OPS at AAA last year.
Yeah.
It was only 70 games, but he had a hamstring injury mixed in there. And this is the point, is that this guy, Hellman, is not a future regular. You're not counting on him to be a big-time player. But if he is the 150 at-bat guy who can play six positions, bat right-handed, run, and maybe occasionally get into one, that's a good bench player.
This is a pretty good...
If he can show that he's able to hit major league pitching.
You mentioned all the boxes he checks off for being the 40th guy on the 40-man roster who's picked up for absolutely nothing a week before pitchers and catchers report. Like, that's a nice job on a roster addition.
The worst part about this, I had a person on Twitter point this out to me, which is true. The worst part about it is this is like the biggest thing they've done.
Right.
Like that move and the one we'll talk about in a second. So,
in a standard offseason, we're barely talking about
this. Yeah, and those are the moves you still make in a standard offseason, but they're not the only things that you have to discuss, and these have been the only things we've had to discuss.
Another interesting guy brought in on a minor league deal, invite to major league spring training, so he doesn't have a 40-man spot for now. Pitcher Nick Anderson, he came up with the Tampa Bay Rays, has deep connections to Heim Bloom.
Yeah.
So Bloom's
last year there was 2019, and that was his rookie year.
Bloom's fingerprints are all over this. In 2019, split time between a couple teams, and he was really good in terms of strikeouts with the 110 strikeouts and 65 innings. Has had some injuries. The strikeout per nine number has gone down in recent years, but he hasn't been terrible. Last year, he had a 4+ ERA with Kansas City, but the year before.
The peripherals sucked last year. Yeah. His expected ERA was over 5, and his fielding independent was over 5.
Yeah, it was 5.07.
Yeah.
2023, he had a 3 ERA with Atlanta.
But 2023, he was okay.
Yeah, that's the point
I'm making. He was okay. He had a 3 ERA, and the expected and the fielding independent were both around that. So, and a 9 strike outs per nine, which is again perfectly fine. It's crazy because like in 2019 and 2020 he was like 14-15 strikeouts per nine, but he's had a lot of arm problems, and I that's what's worrisome. But again, it's a lottery ticket. It's a minor league contract, and it's only $1 million if he's in the major leagues. It's a lottery ticket, and there's nothing wrong with this. If he has a good spring and he's healthy, he'll make the team.
Yeah, it feels like he's been going to be given every opportunity to make the team.
If this guy is just healthy, because if you look at his profile, he throws hard. Now, he's not 100 mile an hour, but he's a guy that throws 95, right? But when he was healthy, he had one of the best curveballs in baseball. It is an out pitch. It is filthy. And even last year, in a down year, opponents only hit like 200 against his curveball. The year before that, it was like 150, 160, right? And back in the day, you didn't hit anything against it. So that's the problem, is your best moves are lottery tickets, right? Both Hellman and Anderson are lottery tickets. There's zero risk involved. There's no downside. It's just, those are your best moves so far. Yeah. which is a different story, but it is what it is. We knew this was going to be the offseason.
And basically the offseason's over.
Yeah, they never BS'd us about this.
No, they did not.
They told us what was happening. Yeah. And, every time it's just a fun thing. You and Bernie talked about it on the Gas House Gang today, and I was going at it with people on Twitter last night. Like, every time we talk about or post about anything related to like these kinds of moves, which are just fringe roster moves, right? You just get the vitriol and the anger, and we get to hear like, who cares? This team sucks or whatever. And I was telling some guys last night, like, don't yell at us. We didn't do it. If you want to be mad at the team, tweet at them. If you want to be mad at the team, don't go or don't watch. That's all fine. You could. Nobody's saying that you should be totally happy and laying rose petals at their feet. We're just talking about what's happening because we have to live in the real world. Like, here is what it is, and here's what we're talking about. When you're yelling at us, me, you, Bernie, Tom, Derek Gould, whatever, you're not serving any purpose. You're just being a child. You're just having a fit.
If you want to frustrate us, you might be doing that.
Yeah, well, they are. And here's what I said. I wanted to run this analogy by you. So this is the analogy I used on Twitter today. You might have seen it. But let's say you and I are friends.
Never could happen.
And our other friend is Chris Ranji.
Okay.
And Chris did something that really pissed you off.
Of course, that would never happen.
I mean, like, really, like, in a serious way, though. Yeah. Like, he cost you $500 or $1,000 with just a bad decision, right? You're mad at him. But when we're together, every time his name comes up, you complain to me. You vent to me. How long do you think before I get tired of that and say, stop complaining about him to me and go talk to him?
Like, the second time.
Yes! That's what's happening. Yeah. In this scenario, the Cardinals are Ranji. You're in our position.
Yeah.
And no, I'm in our position and you're the fan. Like, we all, on a human level, we all understand how stupid and annoying that would be. Don't put people in the middle of it. We're just the messengers, man. Yelling at me or you or anybody else, or by the way, just constantly complaining about the same thing doesn't fix a damn thing.
Right. Tweeting on social media how you hope the fans don't show up, and I'm not going to pay attention to a single game. And I've never been less interested in a season in my life. This, stop tweeting.
Yeah,
stop
and again,
tweeting.
All of that's fine. You're not wrong. Your take on it is your take. There's nothing wrong with that. But one guy tweeted at me today. I've never seen the club in such crisis. I've been a Cardinals fan for over 60 years. You think this is worse than the 70s?
Yeah.
You think this is worse than the early 90s? I mean, it's the same as those at worst. Right. It's an 83-win team coming off.
I mean, the 90s when the brewery wanted to get rid of the club and they were doing everything to not win?
Yeah, and to anybody that's wanting to tell me that they're not going to watch or show up, hey, this is not an airport. You do not have to announce your departures. You can just depart.
Right. And if they're better than we expect them to, you're allowed to hop back
on. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, every fan that's irritated and frustrated is totally justified.
Sure.
And we have been too. If you've been listening to the Gas House Gang for the last 66 days when we've been doing them, you're hearing all of that angst and frustration and you're hearing the criticism. But we can't regurgitate every single bit of it every time we tweet. I can't include it all in each Twitter thread. It's not possible.
Well, Kevin, I'm going to head to Florida. And this is going to be the final time we see each other for about a month.
For about a month. Yeah. Yep. Have a good time down there.
We'll talk. We'll still do this
Get
if possible.
The sleep.
I'll do my best. That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. This is it for Sports Open Line, originating from St. Louis. I'm out Monday for traveling. I'll be back Tuesday from Jupiter. Look forward to talking to you. Thanks to everybody for being tuned in. St. Louis University Billikens basketball, big one tonight. They are matched up against St. Joseph's. Our coverage begins in just a few moments with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. And have a great weekend. Have a great Super Bowl. We'll talk to you next week here on KMOX.